Today's daf, Rabbosai, on this Rosh Chodesh Kislev Tovshin Pei Aleph is Erevin Daf Kuf. Oh my gosh. Doesn't give us many more dafim, does it? What are we going to do? All right, so we're holding today on Daf Tzadik Tet Amud Beit at the bottom at the Helika Mishnah. Ilan Shaya Mesach Ala Aretz. Im Ein Nofo Gavah Min Aretz Shlosha Tvachim. Metatlim tachtab. Shorashav gvoim in ha'aretz shlosha tvachim, lo yeshev aleihem. So, now we get into the question of what is the din? Now here we're talking about even if you planted this tree on purpose in order to be able to use it as an area that you could stay under, and it would be a great place to, when you go camping, you could be under this tree and the tree would come out all the way around, would surround you beautifully in privacy with these large branches coming down to within three tvachim of the ground, which makes them lavud. Nonetheless, for some reason, we're going to see that it doesn't mean that you can treat it as a home, but you can carry under it, but it still only has a din of a karfaf, as we're going to talk about. The other issue is any type of usage of the tree per se, as opposed to simply sitting under it, as long as it would be something that would be more than three tvachim off the ground, you would not be able to do. Because remember, we have this gezerah, ein mishtamshim b'ilan, and that's because we're afraid that if you're going to sit, crawl, treehouse, whatever it is that you do on an ilan, chances are that you're going to end up pulling off some kind of branch or fruit. And therefore, the chachamim asur all usages of an ilan. But as long as it's within three tvachim of the ground, there was no such problem. No matter what the circumstances are, and even if this tree was planted and grown specifically for purposes of dira, in which case it should be a karfaf that is mukaf ladira, in which case there's no limitations of the area of that karfaf. In this case, there is a limitation. And you can only treat it as rishus hayachid if it's beit sataim or less. Why is that? My taima. And this is a concept that we've had before. Mishum da'avi dira shetashmisha la'avir. Wherever you have, even if it's made as a place for people to live in, but because it is used mostly for the space outside of it and not for itself. So there's the kind of people that are using this thing are people that are going to be working in the field. And therefore, they're essentially out of the house. So because of that, we view it as something that is not really ledira, but can be used for dira, which is not the same, because it's only a dira shetashmisha la'avir, imetatim bayetim ibet sataim, and therefore we give it the same halacha that we had about a karfaf that is not mukaf ledira. Because as far as we're concerned, this is not truly mukaf ledira. Then the next thing in the Mishnah says that if we have these roots that go out three tvachim above, you're not allowed to sit on it. Now, my question is, how about the roots that may extend initially above Shlosha, and then they come down? In other words, it's a very simple question. Are we looking at the current relative position of where you are sitting vis-a-vis the ground, or are we looking at the definition of these roots as being ground or tree based on where they come out of the trunk of the tree? That's all. So if it's all relative to where you are, so then I don't care how it happens to be that these roots, maybe they came out of a place that was higher, but now they've come down and you're sitting on an area that's close to the ground. Maybe it's mutter to sit on it, even though these roots are really part of a tree that came out in the Malami Shlosh. So that's the question. Roots initially go up, then they come down. Or there was a branch and it shot out some roots going downward. What would be the din? Rabbi says it's all relative to where you're sitting, and it's mutter lishtamish ben. Rav Sheshe says no, it's all a function of where it came out of the trunk, or where it reached on its own growth. So once it hit a level of being three tvachim above the ground, I don't care if afterwards it comes out and it goes down, or it hits a place on the ground where the ground is higher, and now maybe it's all the way at the ground level. It doesn't matter. It is already usher at the moment that it hit three tvachim above the ground. So Rabbi Amar Mutalish Tamish Ben Dekol Pochad Bishloshad Ara Aragi. Look, by definition, if it's within three tefachim, you are sitting on the ground, not on a tree. That's the meaning of lavud. Whereas Reb Shesha says, also lishtamish b'hem, because we don't care about the fact that you're sitting on the ground. That's a question of how it is to view the mokum. We're not interested in the mokum. We're interested in knowing whether the object that you're sitting on is a tree. That's all. I couldn't care less about where it's located relative to the ground. And since it was once a tree, in other words, once it came, mikoach isura, it was already three tefachim above the ground. At that point, it was defined as a tree. Then no matter where it is vis-a-vis your own posterior is irrelevant, and therefore it's usur. And there would be a lot of similar questions like this, because, I mean, let's say you've got these roots that are damu kimishunita. Mishunita is like the top of a mountain. So top of a mountain, you imagine, you know, this beautiful Swiss mountain. You've got these lower levels of hills that are coming out of the mountain. And then finally, you've got the peak that goes all the way up. So you've got this main central powerful root. And it's basically going up like a mountain and very, very thick, and it grew. But it's got like these smaller parts that come out of it, and they go down towards the ground. So then Malach would be like this. The part of the roots that are above the Shlosha Tochim, that for sure, everybody agrees is Aser. The part of roots that never reached above three Tochim, that's certainly Mutter. Now the question is, what about the things that were above and now they're shooting out to the sides and they're going down? That's exactly where the Machlokas of Rabbah and Reb Sheshes obtains. The same thing would be true if you have an anigra. Anigra is like a water ditch. So suppose you've got this ditch. You've got this tree growing in the ditch. Now, in the ditch, obviously you could see roots that may be three tefachim high, but when you're at the edge of the ditch, maybe the ditch itself is four or five tefachim high, you know? So then whatever is on the level that's outside of the ditch is at ground level. So that would be exactly the same issue. According to Reb Sheshes, you look at it relative to the ditch. Because if it were, you were in the ditch, then this would be a tree. The fact that currently it's ground for you doesn't change the fact that you are sitting on something, an object that was defined as a tree. But according to Rabbah, all we look at is basically, where is it currently in terms of the ground to you? The same thing would be true. Let's say you see this very often in Yerushalayim. You've got like a tree that is built into the corner of the walls of a chatzar. So they weren't allowed to cut down the tree. They built up the walls all the way up to the edge. So the question over there, somebody had a question like that in South Africa that they asked me, Lala, I forgot who it was. One of you asked that. Maybe it was Danny. Oh, whatever. Okay, in any event. So over here, you've got a tree that is essentially surrounded by wall, except the part of the tree that is too big to be taken in by the wall. That part of the wall, that part of the tree sticks out. So that would be also, again, would be the same thing. According to Rabbah, you can sit on that tree even where it exits the top of the wall, even though you can't sit on the area which is directly exposed, right? But you measure it from the top of the wall. According to Reb Sheshes, it's always going to be measured from the bottom of the wall because that's when it was defined as a tree. As a matter of fact, Abaye had this very pretty atrium in his house in which he had a tree growing on the ground level and it went up through a skylight in the roof, and it was also available for sitting on the roof. So the thing is, when he got up to the roof, the tree had just about reached the roof level. He wanted to know whether he would be allowed to sit on the branches of the tree that were on the roof. So he came to Reb Yosef to ask him. And Reb Yosef said, yes, you're allowed to do that. Now, this is even though you're sitting on the top of the tree, which is astounding. But that's as Rav Acha bar Tachlif explained to him. Well, of course, he was matir to you, but he was matir to you entirely according to the sheet of Rabbah. Because Rabbah says, look, it's all a function of where you're sitting, not of what you're sitting on. Because once I'm defining the area that you're sitting on as ground level, you can't define it as tree. But according to Reb Sheshes, of course it would be aser. Well, isn't that obvious? Pshita, Reb Sheshes could allow you to sit on the top of the tree? I mean, why would we even need to say that? Yes, I'll tell you why, because this is an interesting situation. Remember we had halacha in Shabbos, the dinim of Hotzah, in which we said that a house is considered to be filled from bottom to top. So beta kamanda malya dam is what we said. So if that were true, Lagabi, this halacha as well, then we said before that if, even according to Rav Sheshes, if the tree is completely surrounded and it's underground, so I would, okay, in this case, it's as if the tree is completely underground. So now the part that sticks out, you're saying, yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, you buried the tree really, right? But maybe now the whole thing is totally starts at the roof level, in which case maybe even Rav Sheshes would be made up. Therefore, says Rav Achat Bar Tachlifa, no, that's, again, not nogea this din at all, because the question of what is the object upon which I am sitting doesn't change. And that's how Rav Sheshes views the whole issue. Now, let's take a look at our Mishnah, because the Mishnah seems to have some application to this machlokes, to not. Shoroshav gvoim in haaretz shlosha tefachim lo yeshev aleihem. So if you've got these roots that extend three tefachim above the ground, you can't sit on them. So explain to me, what exactly are we talking about? I mean, do you think that we're talking about the lo hadri kipi, that they didn't go back down again? I mean, I don't need this Mishnah to tell me this. This is a Mishnah that talks about a din that was kavua in a beferish, a Mishnah that you're not allowed to use a tree on Yontev and on Shabbos. That's a full Mishnah in Masechet Beitzah. Why would I throw in over here something that is clear? So it must be the Mishnah coming to tell me a Chiddush. And the Chiddush is that even though it comes back down, you're not allowed to sit at it, which is basically what Rav Sheshes holds. We just care what the object is and not where it's located. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. It might be talking about, indeed, that it has not gone back down. So what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is, Hakam Hashmalan, that Af Agav Tzido Echot Shove La'aretz. So even though on one side it may be on the same level as the ground, that is not enough to make the entire thing mutter. So that would mean even Aliba de Rabba, who holds that we look at your local position, this is only where you don't have three sides of the tree above ground level. Now, it happens to be that on one side the ground is higher or something, or there's a wall. There, even Rabba agrees that you cannot sit on it. So we're talking about the case of the Mishnah, three tefachim up. Or let's imagine that you've got, which happens very often, you end up with a hole underneath the roots that's been eaten away by water, or perhaps you even dug it out in order to be able to have a place where water gathers underneath the tree. So it's got a chalal underneath these roots, which makes them three tefachim. So then, even though on one side it's the same side, shavala art, it's at ground level, it would still be usher to sit on. Lefisha ein olin bi'ilan. Because the general rule is, you can't go up a tree, you can't lean on a tree, you can't hang yourself from a tree, unless it was on the side of the tree, we talked about hammocks. You're not allowed even to go up before Shabbos and just sit in the tree without any intention to move around or to come up and down. And this would be not only about tree, this is true about animals as well. The reason we put them together is because the two are interrelated, because the gezeira of not riding an animal on Shabbos is also because of the fear that you might pull off a branch or something in order to guide the animal. But don't think that it's because of an inappropriate workout on Shabbos. That's not the issue. Let's say you've got a well and you have to go down 100 feet into the well in order to get water. So you're going to be climbing down into the well by holding yourself like Spider-Man against the sides. That's completely mutter. So, and if you want to climb a telephone pole, that's also completely mutter. So a bor, shiach, mara, agader, you're going to be mitapes v'ole, mitapes v'yored. The only issue over here is a tree that is growing from the ground. We'll see it's currently growing. It's alive. And that's what is usher. So the idea over here is that, again, if it would be only on one side, even Rabba would be moda. Now, there is, however, a little bit of a problem between two brises. What if you did go up into a tree? Are you allowed to come down off of the tree? So one Brighter said, if you went up, you could get down. The other Brighter said, no, you have to stay up there all day. So we give you a knaz, you shouldn't have gone up. Stay there until after Shabbos. How do you explain that? Well, it's not really a problem. The first price it could be talking about, where you climbed it before Shabbos began, and therefore you didn't do an Isser in climbing it. So because of that, you were allowed to come down. Masha Einken, in the second price, it's talking about where you climbed it after Shabbos started. And over there, the Rabbanan gave you a knaz. You want to climb trees? Stay in the tree all day. Or maybe both prices are talking about that you did it wrong and you went up on Shabbos. And still it's not a problem because maybe in the first price you didn't realize that you weren't allowed to climb a tree. And then somebody came along and said, hey, you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos. So over there we allow you to climb down. And the other one was when you did it on purpose and you knew you were doing an Isser. So maybe there we give you a knas that you're not allowed to come down. Or maybe both of them are talking about Beshogeg. And the machlokas is a very famous machlokas, which is called Kansina Shogeg Otumezi. Meaning, once we would be kones, if it was done on purpose, are we kones all cases? And that's the din. You went up on a tree, you don't come down. So that would be the machlokas. One man, the Omar, the Tana, this is the last Tana, the second one holds that we're kansina shogeg otumezit. And the first brother that said you're allowed to come out. So it's lo kansina shogeg otumezit. Fine. The question is, it could be that this is a really machlokas tanoim, because Rav Huna brother of Yeshua points out that l'chora, we have a machlokas about what to do in this case because of another issue. Nothing to do with katsir chogi got to maze it. The problem over here is that something is very strange. If we're letting you come down, so that you're doing an isser coming down. If we're telling you to stay up, you're doing an isser staying up because you're not allowed to be in the tree, right? What you said before, ein nishanim ala ilan. So basically, you can't win. In other words, no matter what's going to be, you're going to be doing an Isser. So I think that this has to do with whether it's better to do some Isser and at least get rid of a problem, or whether to just don't do anything and then the problem continues. I mean, where do we have that machlokas? Very interesting. We have that machlokas in Zvachim, where over there you have karbonas that you're supposed to give only one matana to the Mizbeach. So say I have a Bechor. And that dam of the Bechor gets mixed up with a carbon that requires four matanas. Now Rashi learns four matanas means literally four matanas, meaning it's talking about a carbon chatas. Tosis points out that that's a big problem. Because remember that the korban chatas is put on the karnota mizbeach, which is above the chuta sikra. Mashenke and the bechor is put on the bottom. And the Gemara there was not talking about violations of where on the mizbeach you put it, but rather how many matonos you give. So therefore, Tosus understands that the question over here is that, let's say you had the dam of a bechor of one matona, that's mixed, with the dam of an eila, which is Shnayim Shehin Arbas. When it says over here four, it means the two diagonal matanas on the sides of the Mizbeach, which are the equivalent of four. Okay, whatever the case is, we have a machlokas over there, what to do. Is it best to give them all the matan arba? So that way you gave too much of the Bechor, which is an Isser. You're not allowed to give too much of the Bechor, but at least you gave the minimal of the Bechor and it was kosher now. And now you also did the chatas, or according to Tosis, the oila, correctly. This is a machlokas. Give, according to one man d'yomar, you give the four. And if you had a case of a four, so if you have two different matan arba, just to go through the cases one by one, inside. Matan arba, b'matan arba. So our first case was, you have nitani b'matana achas, matana achas, that's fine. Give them all matana achas. Matan arba, give them all matan arba. And how about, however, if you have a mixture that is matan arba, b'matan echas, then what? So Rebbe Eliezer says, best thing is, give the matan arba. That way you gave what you needed to give of the Bechor, plus you did the oiler or the chatas correctly. Rebbe Yeshua says, no, it's better to just give one. So Rebbe Eliezer said to Rebbe Yeshua, How could you give less than what you're supposed to give if you're going to be over on an iser of Baal Tigra? You're not allowed to do less than the amount that the Torah asks of you. Said to Rabbi Yeshua, I don't understand. And how can you give more? You're being over on Baal Tosif. So Rabbi Eliezer says, well, I mean, you're over on Baal Tosif only if you would be adding where it's by itself. So obviously, I would never say you're allowed to give the dam of a bechor more than once. But in this case, your intent is to do what you're doing, nothing to do with the dam of the bechor, but only to be able to give the dam of the oila. And there isn't an iser where there's no intention for the Baal Tailom Rulekishu Batsmo. So Rabbi Yoshua said to him, I say the same thing. In not giving more and being yotze with the din, remember that anything that is put on the Mizbeach, you're yotze b'diavad, you're yotze with one matana. So I say the same thing is true. What are you asking me? Well, you're not giving enough. The Torah only said to give enough when you're not going to be over on some kind of iser, when you're giving enough. But I mean, in this case, I'm doing the absolute minimum and I'm not able to give more. Furthermore, said Rabbi Yoshua, look, the way you've got it is you're going to be giving and you're going to be actively over on this iser, right? Shokishinatata avata batosif, and you did that maisa with your own hands that you weren't allowed to do. And what I did, I passively did not give more than one. Okay, so I didn't do the full kiyum of the mitzvah of the eila, or Rashi's chatas, right? So therefore, if the question is that you've got two possibilities, so apparently, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's better to be passive, not to be active. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if you're going to be Mekayim this mitzvah, so be active. So the same thing should be true over here, I think. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who says, look, you better do what you got to do. So then he would be the man d'omer that says in the brisa, then get down off of that tree. Because you're going to sit there all day in the tree. You're going to be over in Israel all day sitting in that tree. Whereas according to Rabbi Yoshua, it's better to be passive than to do something active. So then in this case, you wouldn't be yered. I think that's the simplest explanation of the two brisas. You don't have to get into any of these other issues before Shabbos, after Shabbos, Shogeg, Mezid. It's simply a question of what is the better option, where all of your options are not great. Says the Gemara, I don't see that what you're saying is true. I mean, it's very possible that there's no relationship at all between the two brises and that. Because Dilma Loi, Hatkan Lokam Rebbe Eliezer, Atzam Kuma Seyod. When did Rebbe Eliezer say? It's better to actively do something. That's when what you are actively doing is a mitzvah, which by giving the dam and the mizbeach, I'm doing a mitzvah. Over here, I'm not doing a mitzvah. I'm just avoiding continuing to do the aveira of sitting in the tree. I'm just a mitzvah to get off of the tree. So maybe he would agree, you know what? It's better not to do an action where you're going to be, every time you step on a branch on the way down, maybe you'll be coming to this issue or pulling off a band. Don't. Better just stand still and don't get off. Nothing to do with the knas. Or I could say the other way around. I could say, look, you know, Rabbi Yeshua said over there, it's best to remain passive. You know why he said that? That's because in that case, he's not doing anything wrong by not giving that extra matana. He's just not doing what's right. But over here, as long as he's sitting in that tree, he is doing something wrong. So where would you see that according to him, it would be mutter to kavod isura? You should do an iser, said Rabbi Yeshua. Where do you say that? So therefore, he would say, get down off of that tree as fast as you can and don't do an iser. I don't see there's any connection. It's better the way that we explained it initially as one of those other alternatives. Now, one Braita said, it doesn't matter whether the tree is living or the tree is essentially dead and it's completely dry. And another Braita says that when do we say that you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos? That's only if it's a living tree. But if it's a completely dried out tree, then it would be mutter. So how do you explain that contradiction? It's no problem. I mean, the one about the dried out tree could be talking about where it may currently be dry, but it's gizo machlif, and often comes come back to life again and start growing new branches. Mashenke in the Braita that says it's okay. It's talking about it's completely dead and it's never going to get start sprouting again. That doesn't make any sense. You would not call a tree that is going to start growing again dry. Why? That's just not what the word means. Yavesh means a dead tree. So Gizoma Khalif, you call that Yavesh? Yavesh Karitale? I don't think that's a trap. Okay, so let's give another answer. Elolokasha. The difference between the two brightot is whether it's obvious that the tree is dead. So one is talking about where you're allowed to climb the tree. It's talking about in the summer. And in the summer, everybody looks at that tree and say, oh, well, I mean, that's just a telephone pole. It doesn't have a single living leaf on it. And it's obviously dead. And therefore, that explains why that guy is climbing the tree. Mashenke in the Braita, he says you're not allowed to use the dry tree. That's because if it's in the middle of the winter, how does anybody know that the tree is dry? I mean, it's not their tree for them to know that it hasn't had any leaves at all. So because of that, we answer it in order not to make it appear that you're climbing a living tree. But how is it mutter even in the summer? I understand. Just because, I mean, I understand it doesn't have any leaves anymore. It's dried up. But I mean, there may be fruit that are still on there from last year. So maybe people will think that if you knock off an old pomegranate that, you know, will often sit on the tree for ages, you know, so they'll think that you're allowed to pick a tree. I don't know. Pick a fruit from a tree. No, it's talking about that there are no fruit. Okay, but fine. I mean, but there's twigs that are going to come off. No, then they'll think you're allowed to do that even from a live tree. No, it's talking about Geduda. It's talking about just like a bare tree. It doesn't have, it's just like a trunk. So is that mutter? I thought Rav Ikla la Pastia, the Yosebi Geduda. So Rav went to Pasta Town and he said, you're not even allowed to use just a plain trunk of a tree. This was like a really nice restaurant where they had all these trunks around, you know, and everybody was sitting on the trunks. And he said, you can't even buy that. Yeah, but that we know that when Rav does that kind of thing, it's often because he finds a bika. He finds a valley. And why do we call it a bika? Bika is a place that doesn't have any shmirah, doesn't have any walls around it, or it's just wide open. So when you have a town that's made out of Amei Haaretz and that nobody is responsible to make sure that the Torah is kept properly there, so then you don't give a well-defined, on-the-edge kind of answer, because people can't handle on-the-edge. They're just not smart enough. Just don't sit on a tree of any kind, even if it's just a trunk. Okay, now, how about grass? So, Amar Amibar Abba Amar Basi, you're not allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos. Osur le'odam, she'alecha gabe asavim b'shabbat. And there's even a remez to this in the pasuk. It says, ve'otz b'raglayim chotei. Somebody who's a little too fast on his feet, that guy is going to be over on a chet, which is Chilul Shabbos, because he's going to be uprooting some of the grass. Now, there's a brisa that says just the opposite. The one brisa said, Mutar leilecha gabei asavim b'shabbat, you're allowed to walk on the grass. And another brisa says, Usher, I'd explain that. That's not a problem. And the one that says that you're not allowed to is referring to living grass, where if you tear the living grass out of the ground, so then you're going to be over on being acre. That's kotzer. And the other brisa, which says you can walk, it's talking about grass that's completely dried out. And even if you would pull that out of the ground, you wouldn't be over on an iser, because something that is dried is not considered to be mechurba lekarka any longer. Or I could say even both of the brises are referring to living grass. It's not a problem, because where you say it's usher, it's talking about in the summertime where there's a lot of seeds on the grass. We're talking about tall grasses. And as you walk, you're going to knock off the seeds, and that is usher. And where there's no longer any seeds in the grass. Or I could tell you, maybe both of them are talking about summer grass. And the difference is, are you wearing shoes or are you not wearing shoes? If you're wearing shoes, it's not a problem. If you're barefoot, then the grass is going to get caught between your toesies. And as you walk, you're going to be uprooting the grass. Or I can tell you both are talking about that you're wearing shoes. And it depends what kind of soles you got on your shoes. If you got one of those gripper soles, then there's plenty of place to grip the grass in the sole and rip it out. If you got a nice flat sole, yeah, you understand. Or I could say that even both of them are talking about you're wearing shoes. You have those kind of gripper soles or spikes on the sole. And one is talking about long grass, which can get caught in that shoe. And one is talking about short grass. Anyway, the whole thing is irrelevant. What? Yeah, it's irrelevant because today we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, remember? And Rabbi Shimon also Dover Shenem is Kavein, is Mutter. So because of this, Kulo Shar is certainly not going to be a psik resha that every time you walk across grass, you're going to be uprooting the grass. So because of that, there's really no problem at all. So therefore, utilizing the grass is not a problem, but it would still be a problem. You'd have to be careful about certain things. It's going to take, say, you want to make a picnic over grass if you've got any liquids. So that could be a problem, because then if any liquid spills, so then you would be over actually on being Zorea, because feeding the grass liquids is an Isser. Or the question whether urinating on the grass is not considered to be a real problem, because urine doesn't do much good for the grass. So the damage is just as bad as whatever. It's not called the Derech Mizria. So this leaves us a little bit hanging in the air, because remember we had a pasuk about the Otz Baraglayim Chote. I mean, that sounded very impressive. You know, we got a remez in Mishlei. Don't walk over on the grass. Okay. So what do we do now with the don't be so fast on your feet? And what is it referring to now? Well, it's referring to something else. Actually, referring to being a little bit over persuasive about engaging in intimate relations. And also, Adam Shechuf Ishtolet Var Mitzvah, even where those relationships are Mamash Mitzvah, and a person wants to have a child, whatever it is, you cannot pressure a woman into relations. Shenemar Va'otz Baraglayim Chote. So here we're using Raglayim as a euphemism, like Korah Shachav Ben Raglea, all of that. So feet, between her feet, we say over there. It's the same idea. It refers to something that has to do with intimacy. Vam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, it's worse than that. It's, if you take a look at the beginning of the pasuk, so Otz Baraglayim Chote is introduced with something that tells us something terrible, which is that if you do pressure a woman into relations and she does get pregnant, so then Avin Lo Banim She'enam Muganim, then the nefashot that are brought through that pregnancy are bad people. Where does it say that in the pasuk? The first part of the pasuk of Otz Baraglayim. It says, gam below dat, meaning without consent, nefesh lo tov, the soul is not good. The Otz Baraglayim chote, besides which, even if she doesn't get pregnant, just moving, being too fast on your feet, as a euphemism, is bad. Tanya Miyachi, Gam Belodat, Nefesh Lotov. Actually, Brisa says this. This is referring to somebody who pressures his wife into relations. Nakofa Ishto Ledvar Mitzvah. Va'atz Baraglayim Chote, you're a little bit too fast on your feet, is talking about having one act of intercourse followed by another. And that, like if the woman is already satisfied, you're just bothering her. So leave her alone. What? I thought like this is a big issue that you're supposed to do that. Didn't we say, Va'amar Rova, what is that, Jeff, is, I see, that's cute, but we always use euphemisms. Yeah, so that's a very nice thought, though. I see you have your mind on the future. Well, it's at least something of a nechama to know that we will be involved in something wonderful, even when we have to kiss Erev and goodbye. Which is very rough. Okay. Is it true, though? I thought like it's a good idea to have multiple sexual relations. Because it says, Arotze la'asov kol banav zicharim, yiv'ol v'yishneh. Remember that according to the Gemara, the question of how close a woman is to climax changes the actuality of which sperm survive, and therefore whether she will have a male or female. So we're talking about X carrying, Y carrying, and that is defined differently by the vaginal situation, which changes. There's actually basis for that in physiology. So it's a good idea to actually be Boel Vishonet, because at that point, the likelihood is that she's already turned on. Look, Kasha, that obviously that's true. We're talking about without consent. In other words, okay, so she's in like sort of a vulnerable position. She's not going to, you know, what's she going to do? She's not going to say no, you know. But I mean, if Lamaisa, you see that she's interested and she consents, so then that's, we're saying that that's a very good idea. But in the Braisa, where we said it's, that's called Atzparaglayim, that's talking about where you don't find that consent. Now, of course, consent is a little strange kind of thing when it comes to a woman, because again, do you really know that there's consent, or is it like, you know, okay, let's get on with it, it's basically my job kind of thing? And you're not really going to get a clear answer. And that brings us to the following issue, because as Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni points out from Rabbi Yochanan, that if a woman actually makes it clear that she wants to have these relations, so kol isha shetovat ba'ala ledvar mitzvah, then that affects the kind of children that she's going to have. She's going to have the most amazing children. Moshe himself was unable to find kids like that, or adults like that, in his door. Because, look, I mean, he specifically was supposed to be looking for Anashim Chachamim, Nivonim, Yeduim L'Shivtechem. That's what he tells everybody when he wants to create that Sanhedrin, right? And then when it actually comes to taking those people, he never gets those people. All he gets is Ve'akachet Rosh Shivtechem, Anashim Chachamim the Yeduim. Well, what happened to the Nivonim? Apparently he couldn't find any Nivonim. So that means that there must have not been any really good candidates. Masha'in came by Leah's children. What do we find? Leah went right out and she tells her husband, okay, you're going to be sleeping with me tonight, baby. I hired you. Whoa. So what came from that? Yisachar. And we know that me, B'nei Yisachar, Yodevi Nalidim, Ladat Ma Yaseh Yisrael. And there it says, Roshehem Batayim, V'chol Acheyem Alpiyem. So they were B'davka Nivonim. It says Yodevi Na. And all of Klal Yisrael were part of that. So then that means that there were these tremendous, very good kasha there by Moshe and Dal, if you look at your notes. And that means that the B'nai Yisachar were, in fact, Nivonim, ultimately. And that must be because of that zechut. Wait a second. I thought a woman is really not supposed to be doing that kind of thing. I mean, here you're saying she's supposed to be, like, openly asking her husband for relations. Didn't Rav Yitzhak Bar Vodimi say there were 10 separate curses that affect Chava in Gan Eden? And we go through them. So, Ela Isha Amar, Harbeh, Harbeh. Well, let's take a look at each one of them. So the Harbeh, Harbeh, what's the double Lashon? This refers to two different blood problems. One is Dam Nida, one is Dam Besulim. These are tzores, real tzores to have to worry about. Arba arba itzvonech. What is the itzavon? That's the tzar gil bonim. The heronech is the hirayon. That's the tzar ha'ibor. Beitz of tildi bonim. That's the pain of childbirth itself. Kamashma'o. Ve'el ishech teshukatech. This means, malam she'isha mishtokeket al-ba'ala, b'shash yotzi l'derech, that a woman is always in a position of feeling she needs that husband. The husband's going to be going away. She wants to have relations with him. But then it goes on to say, v'hu yimshol bach, that means that she wants, but it's in her heart. And the man, he says what he wants. Eish toveh b'peh. And this is considered to be a mida tova b'nashim, that women should, in fact, be tzanua, not openly discuss their desire for intimacy. So then, didn't we say that it's like a big sechus a minute ago? That she's supposed to be tovat as ba'ala? No, when we say tovat, we don't mean that she's like really gross about it. We mean that she's matriya tzuya kemeh. She does things that turn him on. So it's very clear to him that she is interested. Wait a second. You just listed 7 and you said that there were 10. What were the other 3? Well, Kiyasar of Dimi. Dimi said, look, she's wraps herself up like she's in mourning. Remember, she's got to cover her hair for all that beautiful hair. About mourners do that, you know. And she's menuda mikol adam. And she's cut off from other people because not allowed to have relations with others, whereas a man can have relations with whoever he wants. V'chavusha bebeit asurin. And like she's locked in prison, you know, because of kol kvuda bat melech pnima. And that's terrible. Wait a minute. What do you mean she's menuda? Because what? That she's not allowed to be alone with another man? I mean, a man's not allowed to be alone with a married woman. No, but she's not allowed to have another husband, is she? But a man's allowed to have as many women as he wants. So that's different. But Masnisatana, the Brisa adds, you know what? Besides all of that, she grows her hair like a demon, you know? What is this hair all over the place down to her waist? So she's migadelet se'arkelilit. Then she has to urinate, she has to sit down. What is the kind of animal? I mean, got no equipment to urinate with properly. And then she's nasit karla ba'ala. She's like a pillow for her husband. And she's usually going to be in the position on her back, and he's going to be lying on her like she's some kind of pillow. I mean, it's horrifying. Whereas Rav Dibi says, what's a bit about that? Hani shevachula, that's really nice, I think. I actually like that hair, you know. And anyway, Rav Chiya says, when it says in the pasuk, Malfeinu mi bahamot aretz, me'of ha-shamayim yichakmenu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us through sociobiology, that we can learn what life is about by watching animal behavior and understanding that whatever the source of that evolutionary behavior was, it obviously is part of survival and therefore part of the way that the earth is meant to be. And like, for instance, let's say it teaches us, like we can learn from a mule that korat umashtenet mayim, dafka, she does not expose herself, so she sits down while urinating. Well, what's wrong with sitting down with urinating? Umeof hashamayim, what's that? That's a looking at mating procedures of birds, most incredible mating procedures, and all these dances and everything. And the one that's most nicker to everybody, because it's out there in your backyard all the time, is the rooster. So this rooster, like, it's moving its wings, you know, it's spreading its wings before mating. And then after mating, it's moving its head up and down. Coo, 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 right, right. What is that all about? We'll have to see later. But that means there's things you got to do to make a woman happy. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you know, even if the Torah hadn't taught us these things, we could have learned how to be tsanua from a cat. I mean, look how a cat defecates, you know. We could have learned that you don't steal from an ant. An ant puts a little pheromone on a thing, nobody touches it. We could have learned about monogamy from a yona. Yona takes a mate for life. We could have learned how you're supposed to mate from a tarnagol. Derech eretz for tarnagol. First, the tarnagol is befayez. He makes Mrs. Chicken feel good. And then he's boel. Understand, what's he doing to be mefayez? Ah, that's because you don't understand the rooster. What he's doing when he's moving those wings up and down. Om Revyut Om Rav. What do you think that means to the chicken? It means, I intend to get you a mink coat that's going to cover you from your head all the way down to your tippy toes. And then, so why afterwards? Why does he always go bouncing up and down like that and exposing his crest? Aye, what he's saying over there, listen, the crest of that cock should be cut off if he's got the money and doesn't want to buy. Let me tell you something. It's all I want to do is get you that coat. I want to get you that coat. But what can you do? Anyway, so that this is an incredibly, incredibly advanced understanding of the nature of sociobiology. I mean, in the world as a whole, this is only recognized like for the past 30, 40, maybe 50 years. No, it's not. It's 40 years. And the Gemara takes this for granted, that you have to understand the evolutionary meanings in human terms of what's going on. Obviously, it's beautifully humorous, but translating these types of evolutionary behaviors into typical human behaviors, right? This is like exactly, it's showing this is exactly what humans do. Yeah, I'll get you that coat. Don't worry. And somehow or other, you know, it never shows up. But the point is that we're meant to actually see the Maisa Bereishis as in all of its detail, as something that we're meant to recognize as deeply, deeply part of us. Anyway, a wonderful beginning to Rosh Chodesh Kislev over here. And hopefully Bezrat Hashem. Hey, we're going to be finishing this Masechet. I wish I didn't feel so bad all the time finishing this Masechet, because you feel you could spend another 20 years on it and just sort of be getting into it, you know. But life goes on. So Bezrat Hashem tomorrow, we hope to have that life going on. See you, everybody. Chodesh Tov and Mevorach, with many Besirot Tovot.